The harder you work and the more time you put into it and the more effort you put into it while you're on the court and while you're behind the scenes doing your work, that's, you're going to create your own luck. It's not just bad luck if you own the game.
Welcome to Hoop Nerds with Billy Kegler, presented by the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association. We talk to coaches, athletes, and more to learn from their stories and apply learning lessons to improve each individual and stimulate growth for your program, team, staff, and self. Follow along as we explore success and failure en route to improving the game of basketball.
Coach Showalter, welcome to the Hoop Nerds.
Thank you. It's great to be here. This is great.
I've been wanting to ask you this in person for a long time. State tournament, jump ball, as soon as the ball's tipped, Zach runs to the rim, gets the pass, dunks it. Was that a called play?
We run that play. It worked better when Zach was at that spot, but that's pretty much how I'd like to start every game if possible. But we have a set tip play that we run still to this day, and we have four calls out of that, out of the way we line up. It's pretty basic. I just call out a number and that's who we tip it to, and then we know what to do from there. On that night, we could see it's going to be open right away.
So if there's a situation where you might not win the tip, do you still play it aggressively as though you're going to win the tip, or is there a different call for that?
We can go defensive a tip. We had Luke Fisher jumping that night, so we had a pretty good idea we were going to win the tip. And when I think we're going to win the tip, we always call it a number. Otherwise, I just say defensive tip.
There are so many small pieces in the game that can affect it in a positive or negative way, and the jump ball is one of those where sometimes coaches say, all right, jump ball around the circle, and away we go. And there's so many opportunities in a game. So how did you determine that that was a small point you want to attack in the game?
Well, we were just talking about that on the way up here. There are so many little opportunities during a game where if you steal a basket here or there, it's going to mean the difference in the outcome. That's why we press. That's why we run, because if we can get a layup here and there, we can get a steal. We can go on a little 6-0 run or an 8-0 run. That's a lot of times a difference in the game. So we really work hard on our tip play. We work hard on our out-of-bounds underneath, our out-of-bounds on the side, how we set up when on a dead ball, when we're on defense. Like, maybe we can get the ball back right away and they're not ready for it. There's a lot of times, and I the coach from Davison, McKillop, I got that from him because he said just every time you win a little tiny battle in there, that's going to help you win the war in the end.
So how much time in practice are you spending on each of those small areas?
until we get it right. So I don't look at my watch, but we spend enough time until we know what we're doing and until we get it right. And that night, if you want to keep talking about that night, that surprised everybody. Because, I mean, Zach had a couple. He had 54 dunks his senior year, so the dunk didn't surprise us, but the way we started the game and the fact that it was over Popcorn, who at the time was like in Madison, that was a big deal for our team, to let them know, to let the rest of our guys know that, hey, we're here to play. And Memorial had beaten us the last couple times at state. So we had to kind of send a little bit of message, and I think Zach was preparing for that himself.
All right, let's rewind a bit. You had a good long playing career. I'm curious about the first time you coached something, anything, and a memory that sticks with you from it and something that you still use today.
Coaching. Well, I played overseas for a couple of years after I got done playing in college. I coached at camps when I was at Platteville, so I coached a little bit there. But I coached young guys when I was in Australia in some tournaments and some league games. And so I kind of got my feet wet with coaching kids, which I really enjoyed. But I'd never really thought I would be a coach, because I always kind of viewed, I love to play. I would have played forever if I could. And some people here and there would ask me if I'd want to help out coach. And I always said, no, I want to keep playing. I played six nights a week when I was, you know, an adult. But I finally was got my arm twisted to pitch in at Germantown a little bit, and the rest is kind of still being made. History is still being made with that.
And we should mention your kids played for you at Germantown, which is a whole nother piece. But you had a lot of help with coaches, whether it was summer coaches, assistant coaches, JV coaches, whatever it is in your program. How did you go about identifying who would be a good fit to help you build the program to what it eventually became?
When I first started, like I said, I was a player, so I wanted to play. And I actually was playing for Marathon Oil back then when I started coaching. So I would leave for 2 weeks every fall and travel around the country playing for Marathon Oil, playing against Division I teams and exhibition games. And when I came back after one of those trips, I coached JV for 1 year. When I came back the second year to start my second year at JV, the varsity coach had resigned, and he just resigned, and they said, "Hey, the program is yours." And I had no assistants, and we had no JV coach. We had a freshman coach that wasn't really ready to, so I had to scramble and get some guys involved that had not been coaching. I was a police officer in Germantown as well, so I was asking guys that I worked with that I knew were athletic. So it took me a while I coached by myself for a long time. And then, you know, one guy would join, and then a couple guys would join. And finally, by the time I was done, I had my staff of 7 or 8 guys that would volunteer or get paid. But, you know, just asking around and asking for help. And of course, once we got good, then a lot of people wanted to help. But way back in the day when I started, it was a tough go for a while.
How did AAU play a factor in the success of your Germantown program?
My best player, my earliest best player was Ben Aberkamp. So I didn't really believe in AAU. I wanted my guys to play together all the time, and I didn't like the whole stigma of the whole AAU circuit. But then Ben joined the Wisconsin Swing, and that was the summer that Josh Gosser and Chip Rank both got offers as eighth grade, coming out of eighth grade by UW-Milwaukee. And so I'm thinking, oh, something's going on here. And then I thought, if I can get my guys to play together all on one program, they're still playing together, which is what I want, but they're still out on the circuit of the AAU thing, which is what they want. And they want to go out and have their fun and travel and for the good of the individual, have the college coaches see them. At the same time, they're playing together, which is what I need them to do. And we found the perfect program, the perfect coach for that.
Who was that coach, and why was he the perfect fit?
So Justin Litcher was a godsend for my program. As soon as he's a Baraboo guy, which give him a couple props to begin with. But I didn't really know him coaching-wise. I remember when he played way back when, and I remember that he coached the young guys through the years in Baraboo, but we kind of had lost touch through the years. And then I heard he was coaching the Swing, and it just happened to be that he was going to coach Zach's team. Was Zach's first experience with AAU stuff. And as soon as I went to the first practice and watched Litch run a practice and watch him teach what I would have been teaching, I was hooked. I was hooked on Litch. And then it was, okay, how many guys can we get to be on this team? Because I would have had all 10 of my guys or 20 of my guys play for Litch if I could, but we can only get X amount of players, because he had plenty of other guys that wanted to play for the Swing. But as those few years when Zach and my younger son Jake were playing, we were able to, with Luke, and then by Jake's senior year, I think all 5 of my starters played for Litch that year. Evan and Johnny and the Bearden brothers all played for Litch, and it was like they were playing for me year round. And that at that point, we'd have college coaches in for open gyms, and they said our open gyms are the best in the country that they've seen, because we did the same thing in the fall, in the winter, in the spring, and then they're playing for Litch all summer. And it was just competitive, and the competition was what made us good back then.
As many listeners know, I spent over 6 years as a general manager at Just the Game Fieldhouse in Wisconsin Dells. I was able to spend time talking hoops with coaches like Tom Izzo, along with high school and youth coaches, in addition to meeting some basketball legends, including my childhood favorite, Sam Elke, who is in the WBCA Hall of Fame and High School Basketball Museum, located at Just the Game Fieldhouse, which is a must visit for any true hoop nerd. They also play host to the WBCA All-Star Games and Coaches Clinic every year. Just the Game hosts over 70 basketball and volleyball tournaments annually and is a great place to play for teams of all ages and ability levels. You can't beat all Wisconsin Dells has to offer in your free time. The Fieldhouse also has two sister companies in Just the Game Impressions and Just the Game Live. Just the Game Impressions specializes in customized screen printing and embroidery and promotional products. They serve businesses, schools, sports teams, and more. Just the Game Live takes pride in providing affordable and simple live streaming solutions for venues or programs of all kinds. Inquire today for more information. For more info on everything Just the Game has to offer, check them out at justthegamefieldhouse.com.
All right, I need to go back to Australia when you were coaching the young kids. What's something you learned from teaching coaching over there that you could utilize in your coaching in the States? And I say this because when I was in Australia and I was going to workouts and practices, there's things that are different and unique, but you can definitely learn and use something from them.
A big saying in Australia when I was playing and when I was coaching was bad luck. Like it was never my fault. It was never my bad. It was never, we got to get better. It was always bad luck, you know, that we lost bad luck or we made a bad play. It was bad luck. So I would kind of try to teach the kids and try to teach my teammates that, no, it's not bad luck. We have to work harder. We have to get better. And so I reinforced something that I believed as a player myself, that you kind of create your own luck. And the harder you work and the more time you put into it and the more effort you put into it while you're on the court and while you're behind the scenes doing your work, that's, you're going to create your own luck. It's not just bad luck if you don't win a game.
It's not letting things happen to you, but making things happen for yourself.
Yes, yes.
All right, so that was early in your career, so I'm curious.
So that was early in your career. So I want to know, what's something that you believe vehemently early in your career that you changed your mind on over time because you were presented new information?
Well, when I played in high school, there was no three-point line. So it was pound the ball inside to Shuby. And let's get the ball inside. And then we'd pound it into him and he'd miss it and we'd get the rebound and put it back in. I'm sure he'll love it when he hears this. Playing for Bo, swing, swing, swing. We all of us ran the swing till we're seeing it in our dreams and in our sleep. And when I started coaching, we ran the swing because that's what I know. That's what I knew best. And I realized that we did it for 6 or 7 years, and I realized if you don't have the correct players running the swing, it doesn't work as well as it's supposed to work. So I kind of created, and I can't take credit, but did a lot of research and read a lot of books on Dean Smith and Roy Williams of the Kansas stuff, and I started to think that getting away from swing and going into more fast break stuff where we can get the ball down the court and get a shot up before we turn it over. And it freed up our bigger guys as well to run the floor and rebound if they weren't necessarily as good as post players as we wanted them to be. So we created something called Showtime just because it's partly my name and it's partly the Lakers' Showtime fast break offense. So I kind of just made up a word to call it. So now with the teams I coach, we run a lot of fast break. We press all the time. We want to get the ball back and get a shot up before we make a mistake. That's kind of the goal. And we turn it over a little bit too much sometimes, but we also make up for that with getting more shots and getting better shots and offensive rebounds in transition.
And I don't want to go too far in the weeds, but with Showtime, whether it's a missed shot, made basketball out of bounds, what's the first reaction of your players when they're transitioning onto the offensive end of the court?
Well, we have our rim runner, We sprint the wings, sprint down to the wing. So now we already have, we're trying to beat you down the floor with our just by dead sprinting. And the best part about that is we can tell if someone's tired and they need a break, if they're not sprinting down the court on offense. Point guard's job is so important because as soon as he gets it, we want him looking up the floor. And if he can fire it up the floor right away, he's going to pass it. Otherwise, I want him to attack off the dribble. And basically, the premise is we want to get that ball into the post as fast as we can. So one pass to the wing and one pass in the post is the perfect opportunity for us. But then, therefore, it makes their bigs have to run with us. So if they're guarding their basket and then and the paint, now it opens up the shooters on the perimeter. So, and also, in my playing career, towards the end, I played a lot of games against Marquette when I was playing for like this little exhibition team. And Marquette, when Crean was coaching, and I was 40 by then, but I was still trying to compete with those guys, but we would make a basket, and I would make a basket, and I'd be all excited that I made a basket. Well, my guy would just sprint down to the other end and bury me under the basket. And I thought, this is so hard to guard. And that's kind of what the way I coach now. Like, if your man scores, he's going to be excited. He's going to be waving to his mom or his girlfriend. He's going to be happy. And now you just sprint back and bury him under the basket. And if we keep working at that, it might not happen right away in the first half, but towards the second half and the end of the game, they might get tired and we're going to keep running them, and hopefully it works for us.
So you mentioned the wings, and I imagine running wide is a piece to that. But where are they running to? Free throw line extended, corner, is there a position on the court? And then the second part is, when are they looking for the ball in order to receive it in transition?
Well, we like to practice on a court that has a volleyball lines because we want them outside the volleyball lines. That's our rule. And that's why, I mean, I don't like having volleyball on our court, but at the same time, it helps us. So we run outside the volleyball lines. They're on a dead sprint, probably to half court, but they have to know what's going on behind them as well. So they, for instance, if the other team is pressing, we're not going to have you guys just sprinting down to the other end and not help us break the press. So you have to be aware of everything that's going on while you're running as hard as you can. So I guess a combination of both. You have to know what's going on behind you while you're sprinting as hard as you can to the other end.
So that's situational then.
Yeah, correct. Right. Correct.
Well, you mentioned some coaches, but I'm curious about a mentor that you've had in your life and a lesson that you learned from that you still use on a regular basis.
Well, Coach Ryan definitely was a mentor of mine and taught us so many lessons about how to conduct yourself on and off the court, how to practice hard, how to compete hard all the time, whether you're up or you're down or you're tied. Do your work in the classroom, be a good citizen. I mean, you're representing not only yourself, but your team, your family, and your school everywhere you go and everything you do. And that's one thing I really try to get across to my guys is that it's not just you that you have to think about on a daily basis. You have to think about your family and your team and your school and your town and everything else that comes with it. So I think having coached in my ear for 4 years, at the time you don't appreciate as much as you do when you're gone. But he's definitely a major contributor to the way I've live my life. And you know, being in law enforcement and being a cop for 25 years, a lot of the lessons that he taught me just by being a competitor on the basketball court, and no matter what happens, you fight through it, and no matter what happens, you persevere and you adapt. All those things helped me in my coaching and my law enforcement career.
All right, so you mentioned competing again, and I love that you mentioned you were playing six nights a week into your adulthood. But whether you're coaching in a game now or playing board games with your assistant coaches, are you driven by the fear of losing or the joy of winning that competition?
Definitely don't like to lose. Losing sticks with me way. I can remember every game that I've lost in coaching. And a lot of the wins kind of slip my mind. I mean, the big wins always stay with you, but definitely the fear of losing is motivated me my whole life in whatever game and sport I've played. And I don't like laying awake in the middle of the night and thinking about a loss. When we win or when I win at anything, I sleep like a baby. That's my goal.
All right, last question. It's non-basketball related. If you could obtain one superhero power, what would that be and what would you do with it?
I'm not much into superheroes. I'm not a sci-fi guy. I'd have to think about that for a minute.
Take all the time you need.
I think Superman would be the power I'd want because he can pretty much do it all. And I don't know who won that fight. I didn't see that movie the last few years between Superman and Batman. Who won that? Do you know?
You're talking to a non-superhero guy as well.
Well, I think Superman can beat Batman, but I would pick one of those two. And if I was Superman, I would use it to help people. That's kind of the reason I got into coaching and law enforcement. And even doing what I do now, if I could use any superpower I could ever get, it was to help the most amount of kids be happy in their life. And I'm trying to do that now, and maybe I could do it more if I was Superman.
I love it. Coach Showalter, thanks for coming on the Hoop Nerds.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. I've been associated with their products for a few years now, and I'm really impressed by their innovative and user-friendly shooting machines. They also are great people with tremendous customer service. It's no wonder why they have become the preferred choice among top programs around the country and world. I'm very grateful for their support of the show. Make sure to check them out at drdishbasketball.com and at drdishbball on social media. Be sure to mention WBCA when ordering your next Dr. Dish to save an extra $300 off any commercial purchase.